This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Our healthcare correspondent Dan Gorenstein is in the middle of a three-day series about human trafficking, about how the healthcare industry is waking up to the possibility that it can be a first responder of sorts by noticing signs that people are being trafficked, being held against their will, being forced to work for somebody else, frequently in the sex trade. For a lot of those victims, the only chance to talk alone with somebody might be a quick encounter with a doctor or a nurse. So here's Dan with a profile of one of those people and one of those encounters.
Jolene Capone was a runner.
That's what they called me. Like, it was in my file. Nobody wanted me because I was a runner. That's what I did.
Jolene ran from the lousy foster homes. She ran from the good ones. Growing up in Boston, this Italian-American kid spent more time in foster care and group homes than she did with her family.
My mother and I have a really shitty relationship, my birth mother and I.
So Jolene almost expected it when her mom backed off a promise that Jolene could come home after she turned 18. Plan B, Jolene moved in with her boyfriend, until that went south.
He was a drug user and he was really abusive, so I had to get out of that situation, so I went into shelter.
Some nights she'd walk back to the shelter and see this middle-aged guy, Daryl.
A couple of times he gave me a ride and I got home, so I just figured he was, like, a decent person because I didn't die. And then one night, I didn't go home.
They went drinking, Daryl convincing Jolene to sign herself out of the shelter, her and her most important possessions. The night ended in someone else's apartment. Then she woke up.
All my stuff was gone. I had an empty purse. And he told me that it was for safekeeping, that he held on to everything while I worked.
No phone. No birth certificate, no social security card, no recourse. Just Daryl insisting that Jolene had agreed to work as an escort.
I said I wanted to go home, but he just kept saying that I had agreed to this and that this was what was happening. Like, he was in control of the situation. It didn't matter what I said.
Starting that morning, Jolene's life changed. Daryl was in charge. He decided when she went to the bathroom. He decided when she showered and when she slept.
Just 100% control. Someone literally owning you, running your life, every single inch of your life.
Traffickers often are master manipulators, using whatever leverage to keep victims under control. It can be flattery, gifts, even affection. In this case, 50-year-old Daryl controlled 19-year-old Jolene through fear, threatening her and threatening to hurt the few people close to her.
I knew that he would make good on it because he was violent with me and he had a rap sheet that was like dictionary. It's amazing what screwing with your mind can really do to keep you in control. Like, I think a lot of people that aren't familiar with it will be like, well, why didn't she just, like, walk away? Like, you would be amazed just how scared someone could make you.
The late summer of 2011, Jolene traveled up and down the Northeast with Daryl, every night a different hotel. A life that could be vicious, like when Daryl found the tip money that Jolene had tried to hide.
I would get beaten or raped or starved or screamed at in front of people. I only did it a couple of times, but it was like it could be $5. It didn't matter.
To Jolene, the only thing that did matter was getting out. And one night, the stars seemed to align. After a botched ear piercing, Jolene had a serious infection. Daryl dropped her off at an ER in Boston alone. Here it was, Jolene's chance to escape.
I'm 99% sure they did ask me, like, do you feel safe at home? And all those questions.
That sent Jolene's mind spinning and her heart racing. First, she was upset, angry at the question's routine tone.
You're not asking me because you care. You're asking me so you can fill out your little sticker and stick that in my chart and say you did your job.
She also doubted doctors and nurses knew how to keep her safe, knowing Daryl could materialize in a second.
Are you going to keep me safe no matter how bad it is? Like this person could be violent, this person could have a gun. Like, you need to be prepared for it all.
And Jolene had her own plan. All that running had taught her to stay a few steps ahead, and she had nothing.
Even if I did get away, where was I going? Where were they going to put me? Where was I going to go? Were they going to call my mom? Like, it just, there wasn't a lot of options for me, being someone that really had nobody.
So when Jolene was asked, did she feel safe? She said, yes. Yes, she did feel safe. Looking back, Jolene knows no murmured magic question could have broken the spell that night. but she wonders if someone had seen that out-of-control ear infection for the suspicious clue that it was, maybe somehow things would have been different. It's theoretical. Nobody did. And the 19-year-old teenager in sweatpants went back outside, where Daryl was waiting.
I've got Dan Gorenstein in the studio here to answer some questions about this piece, because, Dan, I've got some. I know listeners have some. First of all, what happened to Jolene? What happened to this woman?
Well, look, I'm really happy to say, Kai, she got away. She didn't get away that night, but she did eventually get away. Ultimately, the pimp, Daryl Graham, went to federal prison. Jolene was one of the witnesses for the U.S. prosecutors in that case. She's since changed her name to Bella Brown. She's in college, living in the Boston area. And what's really kind of exciting about this is she gets her primary care at this Freedom Clinic, which is a free clinic for trafficking victims in Boston, run by the Massachusetts General Hospital. And she's even on the board there. She's becoming an advocate.
So take it to the next step then, Dan. Once, and you talked about this in your piece yesterday a little bit, about how difficult it is for doctors and nurses to identify these trafficking victims. How do they get trained? How are they taught to do this stuff?
It's really tough. And one of the things that I was surprised by, Kai, is that, you know, sometimes these conversations, these intimate conversations are happening between doctors and nurses and patients in crowded hallways where there's zero privacy in these ERs. And I talked to this one nurse. She's at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Her name's Annie Lewis O'Connor. And she says she really tries to train her staff to listen for any red flags, anything weird going on.
And when they identify them, they should reach out to some of us who have become more educated in this area so that we can actually come together, have a huddle, and talk about the case and figure out a plan.
Yeah, so that's the thing, Dan, right? There's got to be some kind of systemic solution here. It can't be random doctors and nurses knowing what to do.
Totally. I mean, if you think back to Bella's story or Jolene at the time, when she was asked, are you safe? She kind of freaked out. And part of the reason she freaked out is because she had no plan. And one of the most disturbing things here, Kai, is for people who are trafficked, there's like no stability, no predictability. And sometimes the only predictability and stability they have is trafficking. And so that really is putting pressure on the hospitals and these doctors and nurses to be more than that. And, you know, really, that's what we're going to be talking about in tomorrow's story.
These stories are what we call in public radio pieces that have great tape in them, and Dan Gorenstein can get it. Coming up tomorrow, one more story. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Kai.